Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live on April Fool's Day. Yay! And it is also the start of April. We're so excited for this month, and we have so many wonderful guests lined up to be on the show during this month. And, you know, we're starting it off with a bang here. Dr. Stephen Shore is going to be joining us in just a few minutes, and I'm a huge fan of his. And I know you're going to so enjoy hearing what he has to say. So more on that in just a couple of minutes. But because it's April Fool's Day, I just wanted to tell a quick funny that I was probably a decade ago, 10 years ago. Everybody who watches the show on a regular basis, you know that I'm a huge Oprah fan. Oprah, all the way. And we decided to do a funny little prank, and we put out a thing on April Fool's Day that Oprah was going to be on the show. We had done a whole big thing for months before, doing shout-outs to her, seeing if we could interview her, and I think everybody was like, what exactly does it have to do with autism? And, you know, for me, it has a lot to do with autism. One of the biggest moments, big aha moments for me was when she did a show about autism with Holly Robinson Peete, and it was a big light bulb moment for me. So Oprah has everything to do with autism with me. Oprah has everything to do with everything to me, let's be honest. Anyway, we did a big April Fool's thing, and we put it out everywhere on all our social media and said, Oprah is finally going to be on the show. Shannon gets to interview her. You're not going to miss it. And then, of course, people tuned in, and we said, April Fool's Day. It is, by the way, it is not an April Fool's Day that we're having Dr. Stephen Shore on. He is here, and he's going to be with us in just a minute. But, you know, we came on, and we said, no Oprah. But we'd love to have Oprah. I always say I'm going to get to interview her on a red carpet, and it never works out. To be determined when. But in any case, it's always funny to me now because I will run into people, whether it's people that I haven't seen since high school or people that I've met once, and they'll say to me, oh, I just love your show. I loved your interview with Oprah. And I always laugh and say, I didn't interview Oprah. And they're like, no, I can remember watching you interview Oprah. I'm like, that someday in the future, that was an April Fool's joke. I assure you it didn't happen. And it just reminds me the power of suggestion. You put it out there and people think it happened. But the truth is I have yet to interview Oprah, but hoping that will happen eventually. But today I am going to get to interview Dr. Stephen Shore, and he is amazing. It's, you know, a wonderful, wonderful day for that. No April Fools today for that. I also want to give you, let you know that we're live right now on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and about a dozen other sites. Our wonderful, wonderful Chris Desmond, who is everything and everyone here and makes all things happen. He's starting to show you on the screen some of the different places that you can be watching the show. Facebook, you're going to see all kinds of things there. As I said, we're live right now on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, and many other places. But most of you watch us on either YouTube or you listen on podcasts on any one of the different platforms that we are a free download for podcasts. And we appreciate that you're listening and taking us with us, taking us for a walk, all of the different ways that you can listen to a podcast. We like to remind all of you that we are in our 14th year of doing these shows, and we're very proud of the fact our mission here has always been and will continue to be to provide information and inspiration to that larger autism community that starts with individuals who are themselves on the spectrum. Of course, they are the beating heart of our community. But we also welcome the voices of those individuals who love the people that are on the spectrum, because we believe that together that we can get a lot accomplished for the betterment of the lives of individuals who are on the autism spectrum. But we only do that by listening to the folks that are on the autism spectrum, right? I know. It's April. And we're going to talk with Dr. Stephen Shore about what the all the different A words that go along with April. But in any case, that's what we're here for, to help support you if you are the person on the spectrum, or to help support you if you are the person trying to be an ally to someone on the spectrum and help them to get to all the meaningful things that are important to them in their lives. That's what we're here for. Now, from the beginning, when Dr. Grampy Shea and I started this show and started this network, the Autism Network, it was very important to us to be able to provide information to you free of charge. And we've been, you know, fighting and scrapping that for, we're in the 14th year now. But it does mean that we have advertisers and supporters, and we try to be very mindful of that and of your time, but I want you to know that that's why they are there, that when you're listening in podcasts and it goes to an advertisement, I want you to embrace that, because it meant that you got the podcast for free. That's literally how it shakes down. Now, some of you have written in and said, hey, but I would rather have it ad-free and pay a small fee. If that is you, we did make that possible for you. You can go to GLOW, GLOW.FM/AutismLive. When you go there, it is a $5 a month fee if you're doing it month by month. If you decide to subscribe for an entire year, it is actually less than $5 a month, because the savings, there's a charge every time they run your card that they take out of the $5, and we let that savings be passed on to you if you do it for the whole year. So that is a wonderful thing if you choose to do that. And here's a wonderful note, because when we started out, we were just Autism Live, and Ask Dr. Doreen was part of Autism Live, but then we became the Autism Network, and Autism Live and Ask Dr. Doreen now are separate podcasts. They're literally separate podcasts. I really encourage you to subscribe to Ask Dr. Doreen. But the fun thing is, if you do glow.fm for Autism Live, you end up getting everything that happens on the Autism Network. So that includes Autism Live. It includes Ask Dr. Doreen. It includes our Stories from the Spectrum, which is only content produced by those who identify as being on the spectrum or neurodiverse. It will also include new shows that we have coming up that I keep promising you, and they're in the hopper. One called Today's Hyperfixation, and another one called Autismo y Comunidad. So we hope that you will love those podcasts. We also love it when you like, share, subscribe, let other people know, and especially the one that I see makes the biggest difference. If you give us a review on whatever platform you download the podcast on, boo, boy, whatever the algorithm is, it loves that. And what it does is it lets other people know. You personally can reach more people by doing a review of any of our shows and letting them know if it's something that you like or you don't like. We always love to hear from you guys, because that's a wonderful thing. Now, throughout April, we have some amazing shows for you. I want to go down for this week. But I want to tell you that the calendar for the first 2 weeks is up on our Facebook, and we're going to start to populate that on other channels as well. But we will get the one, it's already made for the second 2 weeks. It's just, you know, to put it up together, it's, I don't know. But we'll get that up to you as well. But this week, we have today, as I said, Dr. Stephen Shore, amazing, amazing guest. Tomorrow, we have a very special episode with Dr. Doreen Grampy Shea for World Autism Awareness Day. We're going to share a little bit about what World Autism Awareness Day is and the message from the UN, because every year they put out a message. And we've got some really fun questions that you guys have written in for Dr. Grampy Shea about her view of autism and how she came into the field of autism, questions we've never asked before. that on Wednesday, Tom Island is joining us again to talk about his new book that's called My Glass is Half Full. This is where he takes on the issue of mental health, the real issue of mental health and self-care for adults on the spectrum, how important it is, how to get it, why you should prioritize it, and how to do it. Then on Thursday, Kobe Bird is going to be with us. He is the wonderful actor who played Rufus for 3 seasons on Netflix's Lock and Key, and he joins us. It's a very special hour where we're talking with Kobe about how he sees the world, how he feels about different things, what he loves. Kobe is a person, so I'm very excited about that. And then we're capping off this first week with Julie Matthews, who is from Nourishing Hope and a wonderful nutritionist. She's going to be talking with us about the impact of diet, which has now been clearly shown that diet can make an impact on autism symptoms, and further breaking it down for which diets were found to be effective at alleviating which symptoms for the most people. So it's a pretty big week, but let me tell you, there's more coming. Really wonderful. So we start every show when we can, when we have time. We start with something that I have always referred to as the jargon of the day. This is when we take on one word, one phrase, one acronym. We try to make sense of what the experts are talking about. First, we give you the actual definition. When appropriate, I make fun of the definition when it's filled with more jargon terms and we can't possibly dissect it. But either way, we move on to a working definition, which sometimes makes the experts break out into hives, but it's where we try to get a beginning understanding of what does this term mean, and what does it mean in your life today, and what could it mean down the road, and why it's a term that you should get to know. So today's term, as you can see on the screen, thank you, Chris, is perseveration. This is a word that I certainly had heard of before I was in the autism community, but it wasn't a word I used. It wasn't in my lexicon, as they say. It wasn't something that would just pop up into sentences. And then as I started to be around autism experts, I was hearing it a lot. And I think we've done it once before on the show, but in 14 years, that seems wildly inappropriate only one other time. So let's take a look at what our actual definition is. And this comes to us from Merriam-Webster Dictionary. The continual involuntary repetition of a thought or behavior, which is pretty interesting. What I actually chose this one because what I liked about it was the word involuntary. Because I think with perseveration, we think of repetition, but when my son was early diagnosed and they started to use the word perseveration, and I always wanted to know, what's the difference between perseveration and passion? That you can be someone who is really excited about something. And I'm thinking about the fact that right around that time, I went to see this gentleman lecture who is a TV writer that he has written, you know, at the time, and this was probably, you know, 15 years ago, he had already written 50 television movies that were things that were on Lifetime television and places like that. He was just a very prolific writer. And I don't remember why it was that I went to hear him speak, but he started talking about the fact that when he was a child in the 50s, his parents had an old black and white television, and that his parents would go to bed at like 10 o'clock, and he would wait until he could hear them snoring, and then he would come in and put the television on and stay up until, at the time, you know, things would go off the air at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and they would put up this signal, and it would go, right? And when the signal would go off, he would turn off the TV, and then he would go to bed as a child because he was so passionate about television. Television was everything to him. And he said, so, of course, I grew up to be someone who worked in television. And so it was right around that time that Jen was being diagnosed, and I was like, well, that seems like, I think some people could call that a perseveration, but to me it's passion, and I always wanted to know what is the difference. So I really liked in this definition that it had involuntary. So we'll keep this one and slide it to the side. It's not horrible, not very much information, But let's move on to our working definition and see if, and a lot of times we don't take this from a source, but I particularly liked this one from understood.com. And it says, perseveration is when someone, quote, gets stuck, unquote, on a topic or an idea. And it further went on to say, you may have heard the term in regard to autism, but it can affect others too. People who perseverate often say the same thing or behave in the same way over and over again. But they can get stuck on their emotions, actions, and thoughts too. Ooh. I love this because how many of us, raise hands, how many of us could say that we identify with this for ourselves? And it may not be on a whole bunch of things, but maybe there's something that you have gotten stuck on. My mind goes immediately to some of my very best girlfriends in life that when we were younger and there was that inevitable breakup, that somebody broke up with their boyfriend and that you would go out with that friend and they were literally incapable of talking about anything else. I can think of one friend that for 4 years, that's all she talked about was the breakup. And people had talked to her and said, honey, you got to stop. You got to stop. And it was involuntary. She couldn't get stuck. She needed to go and get help and support to get unstuck. So I particularly love this because I think it brings it to a place where we can have compassion and say, okay, this is not a choice that somebody is making. If they are perseverating on something, it is literally that they are stuck on it. It's not a choice. You know, I think that there is a way that we can help people to be passionate about something without being stuck on it. And I think that that's true for all of us, including individuals who are on the autism spectrum. But it doesn't come from saying, stop thinking about that. My dear friend, that friends said to her, honey, you got to stop. That didn't help it. In fact, that only triggered it more because then she would say, but the reason why I'm stuck on it, and then we would go through the whole cycle again. It wasn't until she went and she got some professional help for it that she could get unstuck. So I hope that clears up a little bit for all of us because I do think that this is very much a part of a lot of people's journey, including individuals who are on the autism spectrum. And I am always sad when I hear someone be impatient with somebody who is perseverating on something, as if they could just stop. And clearly, as we saw in the last definition, and as we see in this one, this is somebody being stuck. And I don't know about you, but I have those crazy reels that run on my Facebook. I'm trying really hard not to watch them at night and instead do my calm and listen to Matthew McConaughey. But I don't know how I managed it, but I have a lot of animal videos that come up, and it's always like an animal being stuck in mud. Oh, my gosh. I've watched so many animals be pulled out of mud in the last 6 months. The Facebook algorithm, the Reels algorithm knows that I need to watch that for whatever reason. Talk about being stuck. But I find it interesting that when an animal is stuck in mud, the kindness and the compassion and the caring that, you know, the people surrounding, in the surrounding area that don't even know the animal, you know, that they have rescue people and people do heroic things compassionately to help a dog or a cat or a calf or, you know, whatever, a ewe get unstuck from the mud. If we could bring that level of compassion to our friends, whether they are on the spectrum or not on the spectrum, who may be perseverating on something, I think the world might be a better place. So I offer that to all of us that perhaps during this April month when we're focusing on being good allies for individuals who are on the spectrum and lifting them up to be able to do the things that are important to them, that we do so with compassion. Particularly around perseveration. So that's what I have to say about that. I'm saying good morning to Rodney Cox and good morning to Autism Journey with Elijah. I'm so excited you're here because I've got a really tremendous guest to kick off this month. Dr. Stephen Shore was diagnosed with atypical development and strong autistic tendencies and as being, quote, too sick, unquote, for outpatient treatment. It was recommended for Dr. Shore to be institutionalized. Let's let that sink in for just a second. Non-speaking until 4 and with much support from his parents, teachers, wife, and others, Stephen is now a full-time professor at Adelphi University and adjunct at NYU Steinhardt School of Culture, Education, and Human Development, focusing on aligning best practices and supporting autistic people to lead fulfilling and productive lives. Whew. In addition to working with children and talking about life on the autism spectrum, Stephen is an internationally renowned educator, consultant, and author on lifespan issues pertinent to education, relationships, employment, and self-advocacy. His most recent book, College for Students with Disabilities, combines personal stories and research from promoting success in higher education. He is a current board member of Autism Speaks, the Organization for Autism Research, which is OAR, the Boston Higashi School, President Emeritus of the Association for Autism and Neurodiversity, and Advisory Board Member of the Autism Society. Dr. Shore also serves on the boards of numerous other autism-related organizations. He combines personal, practical, and academic experiences to promote fulfilling and productive lives for autistics and otherwise neurodivergent individuals as the rule rather than the exception. Oh, just like what a beautiful, beautiful statement. I'm so happy and pleased and proud to welcome Dr. Shore back to the program. Dr. Shore, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon here.
That's right. You're on the
East
Coast.
On the eastern side of the United States.
How's the weather today?
Weather today, it's about 55 degrees and raining. But the university is fairly waterproof, so it's perfectly fine.
And we mentioned that you are a professor at Adelphi University, and you have been teaching there for how many years?
I'm in my 15th year.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, Dr. Shore, there are so many things that we could talk about with you, but I want to jump in and talk particularly about, because you travel extensively, you are an international speaker, you go around the world and you talk with so many people and give speeches to people about autism. And so I don't think there's anybody better that we could ask about what's happening with autism around the world. What are you seeing when you are in other countries that you can tell us about?
Oh, there's all kinds of things to talk about. A lot of encouraging things to see around the world. So, for example, my last two trips were to Bahrain, although they pronounce it Bahrain, out there. And I think the best way to explain Bahrain is that it's a model of inclusion that we can learn a lot from. And in every sense of the word, so whether it's people with disabilities, autistic people seeking to make fulfilling and productive lives for autistic people, all the way to religion, there's amazing religious inclusion. And we know that that's a challenge today in some areas, but everybody just gets along and they respect each other and they wish each other happy holidays based on whatever that religion is. So I spent a week in Bahrain and enjoyed my time with the Alia Autism School, which is the main school in Bahrain. It's in Manama, which is their capital. I also visited the Navy base, the Fifth Fleet of the U.S. Navy. They learned that I was there, and they asked me to give a couple of presentations on autism as well. And it was great to see that the Navy is involved in supporting autistic individuals. Moving on to Brazil, which I've just returned from a couple of weeks prior. And there's amazing work being done there, too.
I heard you gave a keynote there, Dr. Shore, and that you talked about the four A's of autism. And we've been talking about all the A words during April, so I'm so excited to hear what your four A words are.
Yeah, and April's a great time. Actually, any time's a great time to talk about the four A's of autism. And that was my keynote in Brazil. So the first A is awareness. And we have been at awareness, working on awareness for a couple of generations. So when I was diagnosed and going to school, autism was thought to be this rare psychiatric condition caused by poor parenting, primarily poor mothering. And mothers were blamed for causing autism. And fortunately now, we know much more, and perhaps the only thing we can implicate mothers and equally fathers as well is maybe the passing on of some genetic material. So all this work by various organizations ranging from the Autism Society to Autism Speaks, international organizations such as Action for Autism in India and so on, and we've gotten to a point where we recognize autism. We're much better at recognizing autism at home, in the community, in education, in employment, and increasing numbers of autistic people reading about autism and saying, well, gee whiz, I think that might be me, doing an informal diagnosis and then getting that verified by more formal procedures. And now the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta accepts an incidence rate of 1 in 36. And that is a lot of autism. Maybe what that means is that if the prevalence rate keeps going up the way it has been, within the next generation, there'll be more of us than there'll be non-autistic people.
Yeah. Yes. So awareness, first A.
Right.
And we've been working on that for a while. So what's the next A?
So all of this work on this first A builds a solid foundation for the next one, which is acceptance. And this is where we turn away from trying to eliminate, trying to cure, trying to make autistic people indistinguishable from their peers. And the best we can do if we try to do that is a poor imitation of a non-autistic person. And greater numbers of people, and these four A's are applicable to individuals, organizations, schools, and even entire countries, as I see these four A's as a sort of developmental process. So when do we know that we're firmly in acceptance? That's when we turn away from working against the characteristics of autism, as I described earlier, to working with the characteristics. So an example might be, let's take a school-based example. We have an autistic student who is not motivated and does poorly in mathematics. So often what will happen is an interest inventory will be taken. What is this child interested in? Well, perhaps one of the child's key interests is using a computerized flight simulator. That's what they live for. They go home and they spend hours on this flight simulator, and they'd even miss dinner if their parents didn't call them down for dinner. All right, so that becomes a powerful reinforcer, talking in behavioral speak, you might say. And often what will happen is that access to this favorite interest will be restricted. However, the child can regain or earn access to this interest by meeting their goals in mathematics. And so what you have is what is known as an extrinsic reinforcer. And that extrinsic means that the reinforcer doesn't have anything to do with the activity that you're engaging in to work towards access to that reinforcer. However, I'm really encouraged because I'm seeing increasing numbers of educators around the world recognizing that we need to turn towards working with autistic characteristics. And this would be the educator that would say, oh, we found a highly preferred activity, and we're going to work with this activity and realize that there's a lot of mathematics involved in flying airplanes. And now mathematics will become intrinsically reinforcing because it's involved. We're involving this highly focused interest of flying airplanes in mathematics. And eventually the child likely figures out that if they understand mathematics, they'll be even better at using the flight simulator. So that's the second out of four steps.
So that's acceptance. I love the example because it's very easy for people to get confused because it seems like on paper it's a subtle shift, but it's a huge shift for the person who's experiencing it. So it's the difference of withholding the flight simulator until you do your math and using the flight simulator to teach the math. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, you have that exactly correct. And there's beginning to be a body of research that suggests that autistic people learn better when our favorite activities, our interests are involved. And that just kind of makes sense. We learn better and faster about things we're interested in. And for, I think that holds true for everybody. But for autistic people, it's probably just to a greater degree.
Absolutely. I want to just address that Prodip Chandro says, your suggestions and guidelines, I have benefited a lot. I have been working with my 18-year-old son every day despite various adversities. So just wanted to get that comment in. So now we have the first two. Moving on, what's the third A word?
Yeah, all right. So the third A is appreciation. And that is where autistic people are valued for what we contribute to society. And we started seeing this happening with the large IT companies, Microsoft, Google, SAP, Apple, and IBM, actively seeking autistic individuals as their employees because they know many of us can engage in computerized geekery at levels that other people just can't. And while this is really good to see, and I'm always up for publicity about this, my question always is, what about everybody else? What about those of us autistic people who have skills in other areas, and in recognition of the fact that it's a myth that all of us autistic people are computer geeks? It's actually a small minority, but big enough for these companies to take notice. However, what about those of us who have skills in the arts, for example, or animation or gymnastics or whatever the case may be? And also, what about those of us who have more challenges? So those of us who may need support in communication, in social interaction, in managing our daily schedule and transportation from place to place. And this reminds me of a fellow I know of in Florida who loves to do nothing more than take laundry out of a dryer and fold it perfectly. Something about those creases and just doing it perfectly in the routine, he really gets into. And I know many people would like help with their laundry. Mm-hmm. And Shannon, I know that he would fly out to wherever you are. He'd be the first person on the plane to help you with your laundry if you so wanted. However, you'd have to pay him to do it.
Yes.
Because that is his job.
Yes.
He spends hours in a hot laundry mat doing what I just said, folding laundry better, faster, and with more enthusiasm than anybody else because he enjoys it. And that's another example of appreciation. he is valued for what he contributes to society. And that brings us to the third of the four A's.
Appreciation, which is a word we've been hearing much more in conjunction with autism recently. So I love that. So what is your fourth A of autism, Dr. Shore?
So the fourth A is action. And action is represents the work that we do to put those three A's together. So it's recognizing autism when it occurs, and that's the awareness piece, and then using that as a step towards acceptance, where we work with the characteristics as opposed to against them, and then moving on to appreciation, realizing that there is much that autistic people can contribute to society. And these are the four A's. And what I'd like to see is Autism Awareness Month move to Autism Acceptance Month. And I'm seeing a lot of that happening, which is good. And we've got one more to go, and that's Autism Appreciation Month.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. One of the things that we're doing tomorrow is we always try to, if we're on the air for Autism Awareness Day, is to read the statement from the UN. And have you already read, because it's available now, have you already read this year's statement?
I haven't read it yet. I am going to the UN tomorrow.
There you go.
Participate in some activities, but I'll have to check it out before I go in.
I think you'll be happy because they say something very similar to what you just said, that awareness is great, but we need to move beyond that. And I think you'll be happy with the words that they chose. We'll be reading that tomorrow on the show. I don't have it in front of me right here. And we have to say hi to Liza, who's saying good evening from South Africa. So happy to have you here with us, Liza. You do have an international following, Dr. Shore. And Joannie is saying hi from the Philly suburbs as well. Hi, Joannie. So glad to have you here. And it's funny because while every time I hear you speak, and I was thinking about her this morning, our dear friend Joanne Lara, who left us several years ago, but dear, dear friend for both of us. And she used to do quite a bit of traveling with you. And she just adored the ground you walked on, Dr. Shore. Had only the nicest, best things to say about you. But I hear you talking, and her particular interest was jobs. And I just I just feel her poking me in the back and talking about the word is vocation, but isn't there a word that's avocation? I'm like trying to think of how to put an A in it.
Well, avocation is, you can think of avocation as hobbies. And
we want jobs.
So if we want jobs, that's vocational. And certainly everybody's got to work for a living. And that includes us autistic individuals. And we need to work towards rising the meaningful employment rate for autistic individuals. There was a study done by the National Autistic Society of the United Kingdom, and they came up with an 88% combined under and unemployment rate for autistic individuals. So what that means, according to their research, is that only 12% of us are working to our capacities, and we definitely need to do something about those statistics.
Amen to that. I want to stop for just a second and talk about identity and words that people use to describe their identity. There are a couple of, I don't know that they're so new, but they tend to be a little newer that people use, neurodiversity and neurodivergent. I want to talk specifically about the term neurodiversity with you because this is a very popular word in today's society. But we're wondering, I think everybody is looking for definitions of what is being neurodiverse and where is autism on the continuum of being neurodiverse. And I want to know your thoughts on the difference between neurodiverse and neurodivergent. My son uses the word neurodiverse to describe himself, and I have had wonderful self-advocates that I love and enjoy a friendship with come to me and say, Shannon, I just want you to know you're using the wrong word. You should use the word neurodivergent. And I have had to politely say to them, this is the word that my son has chosen, so it's the word that I need to use. But I'm curious as to what you feel the difference is, because you're so intelligent and you have some skin in this game. So what are your thoughts on that, first of all? Neurodiverse, neurodivergent.
Oh, sure. I definitely have thoughts about that. And when I think about the two, neurodiverse is a concept describing the differences in the way human beings think, the differences in the way our brains are wired. And there's amazing, incredible amounts of diversity that we see within the human race. So almost 8 billion people on the Earth, we are a neurodiverse race. Now, neurodivergent refers to people who think more differently than most other people. And so we can put into that category of neurodivergent, we can put different ways of thinking, perceiving, processing, and communicating how we understand the world. We can include autism, ADHD, dyslexia, synesthesia, learning disabilities, or what we call learning disabilities, which we probably call them learning differences. And there, within this category, within this large spectrum, is where we find autism. So autistic people are neurodivergent. People with ADHD are also neurodivergent, and with many other differences. So I consider myself as a neurodivergent individual who belongs to the incredibly neurodiverse human race.
Okay, so then trying to make sense of it and reword it. So autism then fits under the category of neurodivergent, but you are also. We are all neurodiverse. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. All right. I think I may have that now in a way that I didn't have it before. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I heard that you have been serving, because you are also a consultant, that you are available to consult on many different things, and you are currently consulting as an advisor for a new PBS kids show, an animated show called Carl the Collector. I want to know everything there is about this and what your role is on this new show.
All right. Well, there is a lot to talk about in terms of Carl the Collector. And what it is that it's the first animation series that features an autistic characteristic. An autistic character. So Carl, the collector, is an autistic person characterized as a raccoon.
Okay.
So he's one of a group of six friends. Two of them are autistic. One of them has ADHD, and the others are... they're neurodiverse, but they're not neurodivergent. And that's how they present. So this series, which upon completion will consist of 11-minute and 4-second episodes, where the friends they get along. It's they're about 5 to 7 years old, and they go through the challenges that any group of friends go through. And what is really great about this series is that it can be used, one, to help autistic people better understand social interaction and communicating with friends, and also to help educate those who are not autistic to learn more about autistic individuals. And what my job is to is make sure that Carl is, you might say, autistically authentic.
Got it.
And another thing I like about this series is that the second autistic character is a girl, a character who is a fox. And two things that come to mind with that is that, number one, females are vastly underdiagnosed and underrepresented, and more research needs to be done on how autism expresses itself in females. So that's good to see. And also, her autism presents very differently than Carl's does. So it helps describe the diversity of autism that we see within the autism spectrum.
And so are you the consultant for both characters, or do they have a female consultant for that character?
I'm the consultant for Carl, but I've also, you might say, adopted. I've adopted Lotta, who is the girl who is autistic, and whatever, I make suggestions about her as well, too. And there may be somebody else who is in charge of Lotta.
Got it. And when will this premiere? Do we know?
Yeah, we do. There have been some press releases, and they indicate that this will premiere in the fall. So it's coming up soon.
And is this a show that will play on PBS Kids on the you know, on regular TVs, or is this more, because I know they do some programming that's more geared towards PBS Kids Online, or is this, will this air on local networks?
I think it's going to air on TV because I haven't heard any mention of PBS Online. We'll probably show up on both, is my guess.
Okay. It has to have been very fun. The PBS Kids folks are very a fun group of people. Have you enjoyed this process?
Yeah, I've enjoyed and still enjoying. We're at episode 50 out of 80.
Wow!
So there's going to be more work to do.
Yeah, you know, this Friday we are going to, here in Los Angeles, there is a big conference. It's the first, they hope, of many, called Autism in Entertainment, and the purpose of the day is to help people who are on the spectrum. You were talking before about how not everybody's into computers and some people are into the arts, and so it will be a really informative one-day conference with a lot of entertainment companies coming to talk about how to bridge the gap from, you know, wanting to be in the field to having a job in the field. So we're very excited that Autism Network will be there. We have a table at the resource fair. We're very excited to see all the people that are there. So, you know, and I hear this story, and it just tells me it's one of the myriads of ways that people can find employment that adds to the greater good and is in the field of entertainment. But you are also somebody who is very musically talented as well.
Right. And music plays a very important part of my life. It was part of the what we today call early intervention that my parents did with me. And I say that's what we call it today because the concept of early intervention didn't even exist. But if we take a look at the things that my parents did, we now have names for what they did, such as sensory integration, play-based therapy, imitation, narration, musical involvement, and so on. So as a result, I believe that is what initially got me interested in music. My parents thought it would be a good idea for me to have music lessons at age 6, piano lessons to be specific. And I think the best thing I learned from those lessons was how not to teach an autistic person how to play the piano.
Can you provide any tips for those of us who'd like to know? How do you not what are the things that we should not be doing?
You should not be talking too much about music, but you should be doing music. So in other words, it needs to be very experiential. So when I teach autistic people music, I begin with creating the materials together. We co-create the materials that will eventually be used for learning how to read notation. So from the child's point of view, there's a lot of cutting and writing and drawing and measuring as we develop these materials, which we then play with in order to gain familiarity with, if I'm teaching the piano, with the piano keyboard. And from there, we transition towards placing little stickers that we stick on the piano keyboard onto a staff. And I don't talk too much about the staff. I don't even think I call it a staff, but that's what it is. And then we match what's on the staff to what is on the keyboard. And the next thing we know, we're playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star or various other tunes that the child may know. And there's always this turning point where the child realizes that they're playing music, and it takes off from there.
Yeah. What a beautiful, beautiful way to teach. You are someone who has authored many different books. I wondered if you could take just a minute. We've got about 3 minutes to go through some of the different books that you have available, most of which we can find on Amazon. You also have a wonderful website, too, that's filled with fabulous information. Just take us through, here we are in April, if somebody wants to read more because they're hearing you and they go, my goodness, this gentleman has a voice of reason and calm, I'd like to read more from him, what would you recommend to start with?
All right, well, I'd start with my autobiography, Beyond the Wall, Personal Experiences with Autism and Asperger Syndrome, which is available from Future Horizons. That book uses the autobiographical style to discuss challenges in being an autistic person, sensory issues, giving music lessons, learning music like I just described, and also teaching strategies that will be helpful to autistic individuals. And then I turn towards successful navigation of transition to adulthood in the areas of continuing education, such as college, employment, relationships with others, housing, and also getting involved as an advocate, an autistic advocate. The next book is Ask and Tell. And at that point, I realized that nobody was really talking about advocacy for autistic people. So I got five of my colleagues, all autistic, to contribute chapters on what they thought was important for teaching autistic individuals how to best advocate for ourselves. And there's a lot of practical information in there written for and by autistic individuals. Autism for Dummies, Understanding Autism for Dummies is the next book. And that one is an introductory book to autism in the style of the Dummy series. And I realized, first I wasn't interested in co-authoring it, but then I realized, well, it's probably better if the book is at least co-written by somebody who is autistic. And my co-author, Linda Rastelli, has ADHD, so it was written by two neurodivergent individuals. The latest book you mentioned was College for Students with Disabilities. And we're seeing ever-increasing numbers of autistic individuals, others with various neurodivergent differences, coming to college. And colleges now realize that we need to provide support for those individuals. We're seeing increasing numbers of universities, colleges and universities having programs specifically for their autistic students. Here at Adelphi, students apply to the university just like anybody else, and if they get in based on their credentials and they're autistic, they're encouraged to apply to the what we call the Bridges to Adelphi program, which provides all the needed support for autistic individuals to be successful at the university. A new book that you didn't know about that has just been released by Routledge Publishers has been co-authored by Pavan John Antony and myself. He's a fellow professor here at Adelphi University. And it's titled Teaching and Supporting Students with Disabilities During Times of Crises, Culturally Responsive Best Practices from Around the World. So what we did is we invited contributions from 13 countries to talk about how their governments, how their educational systems supported students with disabilities during the pandemic, during the COVID-19 pandemic. So there's a lot of lessons and suggestions that we have from our contributors from around the world. And that's the latest book.
Amazing. So tomorrow you're going to the UN. Do you know what it is that are you going to be asked questions, or do you get to deliver a small speech? What do you know what's up tomorrow?
Yeah, well, tomorrow when I go to the UN, I'm going to be there for a couple of events. So on Autism Awareness Day, and sometimes I think of it as Don't Forget Your Autistic Day. And I won't be speaking on a panel, but I'll be there and probably answering questions, and I'm certainly going to ask a lot of questions. Hosted by the State of Qatar, there's a program, Leaving No One Behind, Autism, Emerging Technologies, and Equity. And so there'll be a discussion there from the people of Qatar on assuring equitable access to essential technologies for individuals on the autism spectrum. So that's what I'll be going to tomorrow. I'll see a number of people that I already know from Qatar. Robert Nassif and I were asked by the government of Qatar to develop a 40-hour employment, an inclusive employment training program for their autistic and otherwise neurodivergent population. So I'm encouraged by the work that they're doing and by them asking us to develop this program for them. So there may be some discussion about that. And as I'm looking on this, I see that Mr. Paul Kotler is on the panel. And Paul Kotler is an autistic individual, a non-speaking autistic individual, who people only realized his amazing intelligence once they got him on an assistive communication device. And like with so many non-speaking autistic individuals, once we find a way for them to communicate, then we find they have the same range of intelligence as everybody else.
Amen to
so
that.
I look forward to seeing Paul there, Dr. Ami Klin, and many others at this event.
Well, I am so glad to know that you're going to be there tomorrow, and we look forward to seeing and hearing all about that. And I really want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today and kicking off this month in such a wonderful and positive way with us, Dr. Shore. You are such a gift to our community, and I want you to know how much we appreciate it.
No, it's my honor to be with you, and I look forward to the next time we're together.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I look forward to seeing the new book. I did see it over the weekend, but I couldn't purchase it yet. Do you know when it can actually be purchased?
I'd have to go to the website to see, but I think it will be out. Yeah, maybe out sometime during this month.
Okay, amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. We want to encourage people, if they get an opportunity to see you speak, they should. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, you guys. So thank you so much. Best to your family, and we'll let you get back to your busy work. But thank you again.
All right. Well, thank you, and I look forward to when we meet again.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
What a wonderful, talented, intelligent gentleman. My goodness. Autism Journey with Elijah said, loved this. Awesome. Thank you so much. He is awesome. I want to go over what the rest of this week shakes down to, but you can visit our Facebook page and see what the next 2 weeks are, and then hopefully sometime tomorrow I'll get the second part up. But so today we were with Dr. Stephen Shore. Tomorrow it is World Autism Awareness Day. That is an event that was created by the UN. It does not belong to any charity. I know that there's some misunderstanding about that sometimes. But we have a very special show planned with Dr. Grampy Schaefer, Ask Dr. Doreen, tomorrow. I really want to encourage you to tune in. In the beginning, we'll read the statement from the UN, but then we have lots of questions that you guys have written in that are of a more personal nature for Dr. Grampy Schaefer about why did she devote her life to autism and what was the thing that got her hooked. I'm so excited to hear the answers to these. So that's tomorrow. Then on Wednesday, Thomas Island will be here to talk about his new book, My Glass is Full. It's all about mental health and self-care for adults on the spectrum. You'll love that. And even if you're like, well, I only have a child who's on the spectrum, they're not an adult yet, then I really want to encourage you to listen, because we can't teach things to adults that we don't understand. And I find that so many of us as parents do not understand the self-care piece. And my hand is raised here. I have a hard time with it. But Tom's going to help us to know how to teach that to an adult on the spectrum, which means that we can start that for ourselves and be modeling it. What a concept. Then on Thursday, Kobe Bird, the wonderful actor from Lock and Key, is going to be with us talking about his life. And then on Friday, Julie Matthews, amazing nutritionist, talking about autism and diet. Does diet affect autism? Yes. The science is in, and it's a definitive yes. But there are so many different diets. She and a colleague took the 13 most prevalent diets and looked at them closely to see what helped with what symptoms. It's going to blow your mind. You're going to love it. Joannie said, I don't think I've ever heard him speak talking about Dr. Shore, but I know of him. Wow, isn't he wonderful? He's absolutely fantastic. If you get the opportunity, have him come and speak or go and hear him speak. And we'll all look forward to watching Carl the Collector on PBS Kids, hopefully in the fall. All right, you guys, that's all for today, but we will be back tomorrow with a very special show. And remember, throughout April, we're Monday through Friday. This same time, Monday through Friday, every single day, there is a new episode premiering. Some of them are live. Some of them are pre-recorded because we couldn't get people, but it's fabulous. Check the calendar. And once the shows go live, then they'll be available for podcast, so you'll be able to download everything. It's like a deconstructed podcast-a-thon, but we're just not making ourselves tired. So there we go. All right, you guys, we'll see you tomorrow. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you, too. Bye-bye for now. If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.